This is Dusty Wright from DustyWright.com, and you're listening to the Not Old, Better Show.
Welcome to the Not Old, Better Podcast, a podcast dedicated to your future. The Not Old, Better Podcast is all about revealing your future, offering clarity, health, happiness, and all things senior geek chic. And now your host, Paul Vogelzang.
Well, welcome to the show, everyone, and thanks for joining today. I think we have got a very special show for you. I have a close friend, a longtime friend, Dusty Wright, who many of you know, who's a singer, songwriter, author, someone who I would consider to be a pioneer in new media. Interestingly enough, Dusty and I were born in the same year, and so that that bonds us, I think, forever, Dusty, too. But I think what's always struck me is so powerful about your background is that you came from this world of what might be known as kind of traditional media, you know, traditional music, traditional print. Dusty was the former editor-in-chief of Cream Magazine, worked with Prince and the New Power Generation, and then made a real shift, a pivot, I guess is what it's called today, to the world of new media. I know Dusty well through the years after working kind of in the podcast kind of environment together. Dusty running the culturecatch.com site, very influential site, and one that was regarded very highly, critically, influenced, I think, by a lot of Dusty's many varied artistic contacts, including Dusty, very impressively, David Lynch, at a time that, again, I think many in the traditional media space weren't really embracing new media. I think, Dusty, what you found with Culture Catch was that there was this kind of this connection that you were able to almost bridge and bring about, which my hat, you know, is off to you, and you know that. I've mentioned that previously to you. Dusty's also a contributor to Huffington Post and has added his music to films. So welcome, Dusty. It's great to talk to you again, and it's so nice to have you on the show. But tell us, you know, what did I miss? What are you most proud of?
Well, Paul, thank you. First of all, that was incredibly gracious. Can I use that? There are about 15 pull quotes in there, man. You know, you're absolutely right. You know, I did transition from traditional media. You know, my first guys, I was a William Morris agent, so I thought that was a great bedrock, a great foundation to kind of understand and navigate this world. We used to tease, it was the only place where your parents paid you to go to work there because the pay was so low. But the beauty was it was like a grad school education in entertainment 101, 102, graduate level, et cetera. And, you know, there'd be guys with Juris Doctors coming out of Ivy League schools pushing a mail cart with you. So that really gave me the foundation and afforded me the opportunity to kind of survey the landscape as to where I wanted to migrate to. I think one of the things that when somebody looks at my LinkedIn profile is I've worn a lot of hats, and I joke about that. My wife goes, you know, a master of none, but, you know, a master of everything, an expert in none. But I've always been driven by this new media frontier. Obviously, the buzzword is frontier technologies right now. And of course, I'm right in the thick of it with augmented and virtual and digital platforms, doing some consulting work, really exciting stuff, and maybe in a future podcast I can dive into it a little deeper, because it's just as engaging as podcasting and webcasting was for us, Paul, when we first got into this world. And I know we teased each other. It was like we were a bunch of radio ham operators. We were all kind of trying to figure out this new media that had no gatekeepers. And I think that's what attracted niche people like ourselves. You know, there's needs for niche markets and niche content. And that became part of why I was attracted to Culture Catch and started was there were these niche artists that weren't getting exposure, like a David Lynch, like a Tilda Swinton. You know, artists that traditionally the media might talk about when something grandiose was afforded them in the press or in an award ceremony. but their day-to-day kind of went unchecked. Certainly Lynch has become an ally and, you know, more than just an acquaintance, and I've helped him as much as I can with his TM Foundation and the work that they do and helping to populate that language into the day-to-day. But certainly our work is not done in niche content. There's a lot more content, a lot more people on the globe, and hence podcasts like yours and our other peers continue to wave that flag, which is really important. So, you know, where will tomorrow lead? I don't know what's the next technology frontier. God willing, we're still here and able to contribute something. Not that I'm an expert by any means, but I'm very enthusiastic about these new technologies and how they bridge language barriers or learning barriers or just bridge the need for an encyclopedic knowledge of information.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're somebody that I've always tapped in terms of your expertise. I always look to you at events for advice about how, you know, a program that I might be involved in might, you know, kind of dabble a little bit into some of the artistic stuff that you were doing. And so there's some really wonderful background. I think the other thing that Dusty and I share just in all transparency is we're both parents. And I think that brings with it a whole bunch of additional experiences. And so just Dusty, you have two kids, right?
I do. And that's a great point, Paul, because I think a lot of what we do is, you know, we don't do it to be hip or, you know, the first on board. I think that there's an altruism to what we're doing. And, you know, I think there's a thirst for knowledge regardless of your age. And I always become annoyed when we meet people, our peers our age or older, who have stopped learning or have the ability, or they're too closed down to allow the ability to learn something new about the world or about the youth culture or about what the youth culture is using to engage language and communication. I think podcasting and new immersive technologies are just the new frontiers for that engagement. You know, there's certainly the fear that we're not hip enough for our kids, and they probably know a lot more than we do, and they're a lot more intuitive about picking up on things. And boy, do I learn every day. I have a 14-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old son. Yep. My son will be heading to college next year.
Congrats to you. You know, that's big. That's great.
Yeah, and we're very excited. He got into his college of choice.
Good.
And I think, you know, and he's getting into media, which I didn't steer him at all into that world. So, you know, you always wonder, like, oh, Dad, that's not cool. Or, oh, Dad, you're not hip. Or, oh, Dad, you know, what are you wasting your time on? But, you know, it kind of sinks in as any parental influence will, whether intended or not. So, the parents thing, don't want to embarrass your kids. You don't want to you want to be a gatekeeper for them morally to let them know what's right and wrong. But you don't want to squash their enthusiasm for self-discovery and learning and teaching you and teaching their peers as well. So, yeah, very important to a lot of what we do. Great point.
I think this entire era, this entire generation needs to see that that lives are, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you've had a lot of, you know, you've worn a lot of hats. I think that's a badge of honor. I think that this is the generation that, I've forgotten the quote exactly, but that we're all going to have 7 to 10 different jobs throughout our professional career, maybe more. Maybe this is the gig generation. So I think it's, you know, I think the important thing is to be out doing a bunch of these things, because your kids really can benefit from seeing that, you know, their parents are doing it, and maybe I can do that too.
Yes, that's an excellent point. You know, my father said to me once, he transitioned from education into real estate. He says, man, I've never met anyone who has faced adversity, you know, doesn't always win in the trenches in entertainment, but gets up there and tries something new. And I thought, well, that's probably the lessons you taught me about don't take no for an answer. Don't give up on your dreams. You know, explore more, push more. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, the policy, the shrinking of the middle class is something very real and depressing for a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
And particularly millennials and younger, and our kids included. Like, what do I do with my life? You know, there's a lot to do with your life.
Yeah.
You know, you could start in the Peace Corps right out of college or before you go to college, or work with Doctors Without Borders, or have some other experience that affords you a different vantage of the world before you embark on whatever your professional career may be, which could change between your freshman year in college to your senior year in college.
Right.
You can actually change direction. Maybe your dream of being a doctor isn't realized after your first year of crunching homework 24/7. Maybe you decide that you want to get into environmental studies and a job in that sector, or maybe you want to get into new technology, or maybe you want to get into teaching. So I think it's good for people to be open to the experience, and I think it's important for us to let our children know it's our right to change their mind and to try something new, and if they fail at it, it's no big deal. There are other opportunities. You know, we don't have to be helicopter parents about it.
Right.
You know, we've certainly read those profiles.
Yeah.
But a gentle hand here or there to say, pat on the back. We all need that. You know, I tease my wife about, you know, I need my pat on the back today.
Yeah.
Doing a good job. You know, we all need that. We need that hug, that pat on the back. Like, you know, maybe you failed that class because you're really not engaged and that's something you're really not interested in studying.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, Dusty. I think, you know, all of us have these challenges that I certainly have had my, you know, dips and my valleys and my moments of being blue and having to kind of step it up a notch or two just to overcome some of the depression. My kids, unfortunately, have experienced some of that too. And it's something that I think this economy, this world is facing right now, and the more that we can do to stay upbeat about it, the more that we can do to try different things and overcome, you know, depression and anxiety using lots of different tools and lots of different ways to kind of view potential successes, whatever they might be, not getting so down, you know, about a failure or two that does come about. I think one of the things that, again, I'll gush over you. One of the things I've always admired about you is your music. You know, you've been in that. I read a quote from you that you had to overcome some anxiety on some performance anxiety actually to really begin this career. I think that's an amazing step because you know, you're a successful musician, and to hear you admit that you've had to kind of overcome a moment or two of just kind of potential darkness there, I think that's important as well. But I think, you know, we can talk a little bit about your music and talk a little bit about this song Fly, because I've had a chance to listen to it, and I'm a fan, of course, of yours on Bandcamp, and I think there's so much to be said for the music, but this song in particular I think is one that is very meaningful to you. Why is that?
Well, first of all, thank you. And truly, I mean, I truly appreciate it, Paul. We are so inundated with content every day that I don't pretend to be the greatest singer-songwriter that, you know, that's out there in the trenches. But you touched on something that's very near and dear to me. We talked about this off phone. The whole aspect of depression, how taboo it is to talk about it, and everyone in their family is dealing with depression. And we deal with depression. It's the cycle of life. There are moments when you have joy that you hope never dissipates, right? The birth of a child, the success of a great job campaign or something. And then periods of profound depression. And certainly with the state of the world and how we're bombarded with negativity all the time, it's easy to be depressed. And it's easy for children to look at the world through a depressed lens.
Yep.
So I think it's really important. And my, you know, I've dealt with the personal depression in my family, my immediate family, with one of my children, my son included, and anxiety. And anxiety runs in my family. I'm on my mother's side of her family. So I faced it head on. And I know, for me personally, what helps besides meditation and Tai Chi and exercise and all these things, is
yeah.
try to medicate you with things that uplift your spirit and your mood as opposed to masking the depression, for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think oftentimes we prescribe things that mask the depression. We don't talk about it. We're afraid. We're embarrassed to share that information
mm-hmm.
with our closest friends, even, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Men can be very guarded, even about their health issues. You know, we're dealing with yeah. prostate issues now and this, that, and the other thing, and cancer. You know, sharing those things, I think, help to heal. And I think that people would, they view you differently when they see you open up, Paul, like that.
Yeah.
Certainly music was a way for me to do that. And mm-hmm. I, as you said, I was anxiety riddled to even begin playing music. I came from a family where, you know, you got a job. Being an artist was something you could dabble in. So my strongest impulse as a child was very artistic, but I didn't really know how to express that or to articulate it. When that moment when we were young guys and we saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan,
right.
that sent me down a path, and it's not cliche, it's for many people.
Yeah.
It sent me down a path that music became a soundtrack to my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm creating it, if I'm creating it, to me, there's no difference. There's no delineation between the two. It's like it's the celebration of the joy and the information, the power that music has to heal, to uplift, to allow you to maybe wallow in your depression from time to time,
right.
to heal those wounds, you know, and everything in between. So this particular song, Fly, it's an interesting, and I'm thank you so much for allowing me to explain the genesis of the song.
Of course, thank you.
My wife and I were hiking upstate in the Cascades Mountain in the Adirondacks Park. By the way, it's something I didn't know. My wife loves doing this. The State Park in New York is the largest state park in America. Who would have thunk it, right?
Hello.
Years ago when they were parceling off land at upstate New York, where Lake Placid is, these beautiful Cascades that you can do day hikes in, part of this gorgeous national park. And my wife and I were visiting the kids at camp one weekend, and we decided to go on a hike. And we've hiked this Cascade Summit before. Well, very challenging, you know, as you get up there and your knees hurt and everything. And it's about an hour and a half hike up, or 2 hours hike up, you know, steep rocks. It's considered an intermediate climb. When we got to the top that day, there were these crows that were calling to us. And I'd never heard the timbre of their call. And I just sat there and I go, oh my God, this is a song moment. I got to write a song about this. There are these crows. We've made this arduous journey for our age. Side note, parenthetic, right? We're at the top. What a great feeling. You know, we're up there, we're resting. And I have to figure out how I can share that moment with anyone who cares to listen to the message. I hate to use the word fans because, you know, sometimes it might be one, sometimes it may be three, sometimes it may be more. But when I got back to the city that week, I started fooling around with some chords, and I came up with this uplifting song, but something mm-hmm. was missing. And the next day in the paper was this horrific story about this young woman who committed suicide. She was facing very oppressive religious dogma in her life. She was trying to break free from that oppression. Sadly for her, her only out was to commit suicide. And I think I wept after I read it because it was so, you know, obviously there's a lot of gray in any of these issues. And, you know, no one wants to be at fault and no one should fault anyone for someone else's depression and how they decide to handle the depression. But the song that was exalted by this moment of hiking, this moment of being able to fly free of the tendrils that can hold you back and this incredibly powerful story of this young woman who couldn't fly free from the oppression she was facing in her life, that juxtaposition of being able to break free from our depression and being able to say, I can break free from this and fly unencumbered and see the world in a new light.
Yeah.
You know, that's when the song really started to take shape. And I didn't want to specifically use her or make it gender specific to her or anyone for that matter. I wanted to make this song that could be interpreted by a lot of different people. My music's very simple. I like the Hemingway of writing, simple words, you know, simple melodies. I guess that goes back to the days of the Beatles and all of our our experience ingesting, you know, the music of that time period in a pop format structure, and then kind of, you know, in my Americana singer-songwriter delivery, you know, which is kind of a little borrow from John Cougar Mellencamp, a little borrow from Neil Young, a little borrow from country.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics are very, very simple, and make it uplifting, make the melody uplifting. I've always been very fascinated by the Beatles, who had these uplifting melodies, and the subject matter could be very dark, right?
Yeah.
Or any artist for that matter, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, you know, My Name is Luca. What an uplifting song, but when you go dig beneath the layers of lyrics by Suzanne Vega, you see it's a song about child abuse.
Yeah.
Maybe there may be some people who are listening to this right now and don't even know that. Maybe they didn't pay attention to the lyrics, but mm-hmm. go back and re-examine that song, Luca.
Yeah.
So that was the same kind of moment I wanted to have with this song. It was just kind of the confluence of both things happening at once, and then became the challenge of actually trying to get it down on tape. And I have to give huge props to an old friend of mine from back home in Akron, Ohio, who lived in New York and coincidentally lives about, you know, half a mile away from me on the Upper West Side, Sammy Marandino, who's a tremendous drummer, drums for Cyndi Lauper, Hall & Oates, currently the drummer in Kinky Boots. He has this beautiful studio, home studio called Harlem Parlor Studios. And I said, Sammy, look, we've never recorded before, but I think this song, it's very important that there's a propulsive beat behind it. You're the perfect drummer for this. Would you help me record this gratis? Sadly, we're at that point with a lot of music because it's hard to find income streams. He loved the message of the song. He said, yes, let's do it. We literally recorded the basic acoustic guitar, vocal track, and drums at his studio. And then I added the other layers, the other electric guitar parts. My friend Queen Esther, who's this amazing singer-songwriter on our own front, who's based in Harlem as well, to sing the fly vocals. And I wanted the fly vocals to really almost be like trumpets, to really like be, you know, can it pass the Motown test? That's what good songwriters say. Can you sing the melody in the shower?
Yeah.
Does something hook you in? Is it something you revisit? So I needed that really interesting background vocal, and I wanted it to be a female voice as an homage to the young woman who lost her life in her depression. And then just have the, you know, this push-pull, the uplifting nature, but the dark nature, the duality of the lyrics, the yin and yang of the lyrics, the yin and yang of the melody versus the dark aspects of the message of the song or you know, the results. And I have to say it was, it's a song that I'm proud of. You know, sometimes you finish a song, you go, I don't really know. But it's got the same reaction when people really listen to it and they look at the lyrics and they hear read the backstory on my Bandcamp page.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get it. And Paul, it's that's the pat on the back that is more, is priceless. You can't put a figure on that. Somebody goes, thank you, that's so brave of you. You know, are you depressed? I've had a couple friends of you. Well, you know, we all face depression. I'm not depressed right now. I'm happy that you heard the song.
Mm-hmm.
But the dialogue that is created has been really, really wonderful. And I hope it continues to have that dialogue. I'm actually trying to figure out how we can do some kind of lyric video or something for it. And I'd like to attach it to, you know, a charity or something that works with depression. Either there's a listener out there that will listen to the song and see there's a way of connecting dots for that, because I would like to, I want this song to live on, and I want it to be this message of hope for people who might be feeling that there is no hope.
I think that's the exact message that I felt from the song listening to it, Dusty, and it really, it just instantly grabbed me. I too have had some of this happen. You know, certainly with my family, also on my mother's side, it happened to me personally, happened to my sons, as I mentioned. I think this is a challenging period of life, and I think we all need ways to look at things a little differently at moments of difficulty so that we can kind of emerge on the other side. And this music really connected with me. We'll link to it, of course. We will do everything. We'll link to your Bandcamp page. We will link to anywhere and everywhere where this song can be found so that people can begin sharing it, listening to it, purchasing it. I completely understand where you're coming from on this idea of you know, income streams for artists. But I do agree 100% that this is a song that people need to really kind of relate to and share experience. And thank you for it, Dusty.
Well, thank you, Paul. I really appreciate the you sharing it. You know, it's I think the first time I performed it with Queen Esther, I got choked up, you know, because I was thinking about the metaphor, trying to live the lyrics. And the wounds of her her actions were still very fresh to me. So that, you know, we read a lot of stuff. You know, look, every artist pulls from wherever you can pull from, personal experiences. Like you said, my own personal experiences, my family's personal experiences, my son's anxiety, my anxiety. You know, you certainly draw from that. And that gives, that empathy, I think, reinforces an appreciation for things that touch us. When you watch a movie and the protagonist is facing insurmountable odds, and you face those same things, we identify with that. Or you read a book and you walk away depressed, but you're able to be uplifted by the literature that you've just ingested. So yeah, you know, like what can we do to help? You know, as I said, I'm a content creator. I don't try to label it. I don't care if it's a song or I'm curating a show with an uplifting message or interviewing you or you interviewing me. We're all here putting time in on planet Earth, and, you know, can we make it a better place? Can we share a message? Can we give our fellow man a hug and pat on the back? You know, like, we can get through this together.
Yeah. I remember, too, because you and I just parallel some of this, these time periods and experiences so much together, I remember a song that you did, a cover that you did of Ramble On, which is a Led Zeppelin song, of course, everyone knows that. That to me is kind of it's always been almost a powerful anthem of, you know, kind of triumph of, you know, kind of overcoming some, you know, some odd that, you know, you just do have to kind of ramble on. You have to soldier on. You have to think about, you know, those that have come before, what message you might leave if you depart and do that suddenly, and how your life matters. And that version of Ramble On was something that it struck me as you and I were talking just now that that's a song that is equally powerful here.
Well, thank you. Yes, I quite agree. You know, I'm working on a couple of new songs that I think, you know, I've got enough material for a double record, you know, whether or not I actually do that, because these are lost leaders, you know, I don't make any money, their labor's love. Yeah. And I still want to release something on vinyl. And I've been kind of slogging through this, and I've got some tracks, but I've got a new track that just hit me the other day about social media, which kind of dovetails, I think, nicely in this conversation about what are our responsibilities with social media. And my daughter and I, especially, you know, young ladies and young women, the pressure, the social media pressure, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook.
Yep.
And I came up with a melody, and I'm still kind of toying with the idea of the song title, but it's basically the song title, Don't Give Your Memories Away. You know, don't give your life story away in these moments that can be misread by people, that can be misinterpreted. You know, it's all right to have a little veil of secrecy. You don't have to be so transparent in your public life and social media.
Yeah.
You know, there is a way to interact with human beings that isn't digital, that is face to face, that is more human. And this is, I think, my next subject to tackle in my own way, in my own Americana way of, like, you know, don't be so quick to post a coy photo of yourself. You know, we all share the cute photos and the proud moments of our lives. I'm not really talking about that, but there's some people who try really, really hard to sell themselves, and they don't have to.
Right.
You know, they don't have to look perfect in the photo. They don't have to look this way. They don't have to try to be somebody they're not in social media. And, you know, don't give those memories away. Don't ape what reality programming is trying to share with you as being the status quo of our society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which to me is another whole area of depression.
Yep, I agree.
And I also have a song that I just finished, which I'll send you the MP3 of, which I've not released yet, called Fall Out of Line, about the homeless and about how people slip through the cracks, not just being homeless themselves, but being below the poverty line, and how they've been, their humanity's been stripped, and how we can overlook them in these big cities and walk by them and not really understand. And there's a depression with that as well, as we know, with the homeless.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
So, I don't know, I'm becoming more socially conscious in my songwriting. You outgrow the need to write love songs if you're married. So you look to other frontiers for influence and inspiration.
Yeah, I know what you mean exactly about this idea of kind of, you know, just hold a little bit back of yourself. And, you know, we have my wife Gretchen and I have a son who's 17, who's going through these kind of college experiences. And we've been kind of attending these various meetings with him. And at every single meeting, it is drilled. And you probably experienced this too, Dusty, with your son. At every single meeting, we hear that the admissions people are just crawling the web looking for, you know, images that don't speak highly of potential admission candidates. That they're very careful. The admission people are so hyper careful. It's almost absurd the level to which they're going to unearth these details. But I think the idea is, you know, maybe social media, you do want to have some kind of a relationship with it, but hold it a little bit more closely. You don't have to be perfect out there, because that does produce a depression in and of itself. And man, I look at these schools that are so competitive, and these kids are working so hard to get into these various programs, and they just get completely undermined when some social media page shows up that isn't the most, you know, well speaking of them.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and you're right. They are, as are employers, but they're employees, future or potential employees. Mm-hmm. You know, they're looking at all these things. So I think, you know, the pendulum always swings back. We go, wow, isn't this neat? Look what I can do. I can show you a picture of, me, in a somewhat compromising situation. But for my son, it was very funny, because he doesn't use Facebook at all that much anymore. Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law said, had some very strong words in the comments section on an image of something my son posted. And I think that shut my son down. I think he was like, oh my gosh, you mean grandma's reading this too? I'm like, yeah. You know, if she's part of your circle of family and friends on Facebook, you just embarrassed grandma, or you embarrassed yourself in front of grandma. So you got to think about what you're doing. Sometimes we don't take time out to monitor our kids. You may not want to be a helicopter parent, but, you know, my daughter said the other day, I'm shutting down Instagram. I said, well, did something, you know, we were at breakfast, just the two of us. I said, well, are you being bullied? And I had a very frank conversation with her to find out why she was doing it. You know, because 13 and 14-year-old girls can be very challenging with each other.
Yeah.
They can be mean girls like the movie, right?
Yeah.
And I said, I wanted to make sure that she wasn't being stalked, that there wasn't anyone bullying her. So, you know, the thing here, in getting back in depression and stuff, it can depress kids, and they may not even let you know. Maybe they're afraid of the backlash from their friends. That depresses them. You know, we need to parent even with more scrutiny with social media. Are we really spying on our kids? No, we're trying to help them become better adults and to maybe avoid some pitfalls that they could avoid just by making smarter choices.
Yeah, there's just some issue. There's just a different level of parenting that goes on today, knowing that social media is a factor, and it's such a factor in their life. I know what you mean. Our 17-year-old doesn't participate in Facebook at all. He uses Snapchat, but doesn't participate in Facebook at all. And I think that's telling. You know, you can kind of observe some of these trends through some of these kids' eyes.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, is parenting easier today? No. Maybe it's harder because of all the social media. I don't know. You know, our parents could say, well, you know, we've become very PC in our society. Those of us who want to be responsible adults, sometimes that seems so incredibly taxing and depressing to all of us. You know, you don't want to offend anyone. You don't want to present yourself as not appreciating the opinion, the value systems, the morals of another human being. And boy, it can be, sometimes you just feel like, yeah, I need to get away. I need to shut it all down. I need to go take my walk in the woods. Mr. Thoreau, and I need to walk the beach. I need to lose myself in my music, lose myself in my philanthropic work, whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's start of the baseball season, and I know you've actually had some. You actually are a fan. Are you still a fan of baseball? I know you've done some.
Yeah, I'm a huge Cleveland fan. You know, I've been in New York since 1981, but I wear my Cleveland swag with pride. Uh-huh. Although my wife said I did burn my Indians jersey after we lost the '97 World Series. I don't remember that, or I care not to remember it. Maybe suggested, you know, a selective memory, as I said.
Right.
But the start of the baseball season upon us. But for me, it's the beginning of the playoff season for my Cleveland Cavaliers.
And okay, good.
The fact that I'm the second most famous alumni to graduate from St. Vincent St. Mary's High School in Akron, Ohio. I said that once.
I love it.
I was waiting for my luggage at LAX, and Jalen Rose was standing with, I'm not exaggerating, Jalen Rose from NBA basketball, he's an on-air camera personality, he was a great player, was standing with Evander Holyfield, you know, the ex-boxing champ. And I walked up to Jalen, I said, Jalen, I want to introduce myself, I'm a big fan, and more importantly, I'm the single most important alumni of St. Vincent St. Mary's. And he just laughed, because he got the joke. LeBron James went to St. Vincent St. Mary's.
That's great.
You know, he graduated many decades after me. I use that as humor and as bragging rights. So I'm cautiously optimistic about our chances this year. I don't know. I think it's going to be very tough to beat either Golden State or San Antonio. But as a long-suffering Cleveland fan, there's that Charlie Brown hope.
Yeah,
that I can kick the football before Lucy yanks it away. Oh no, not again!
I love this time of year too. The Golden State Warriors are, I think, a fan favorite for many. Steph Curry is having that kind of a year, but the game tomorrow night. So you and I are talking on Tuesday, Wednesday night's game when they might break the record is going to be must see TV in our house, and so
absolutely,
I'm rooting right along with you. And this is why I love talking to you. I you know, you're such a good man, you're such a good friend. But what a life you have had, Dusty. And it's thrilling to hear the variety of things that you're doing now, and all of your successes. My best to you and your family. Tell us where can we. You know, there'll be a lot of people that'll listen to this and want to reach out to you. So where's the best place to kind of locate you now, Dusty?
Well, you know, they can go to dustywright.com. There's links to the Bandcamp site, to the CD Baby site where you can purchase my music. Obviously, you can listen to it for free on Spotify. That's a whole nother conversation about how little the income streams are.
You and I are going to be talking about that soon. Yep, yep. We'll have Dusty Wright back, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm a big believer too.
And I think the new media, the new frontier technologies may be a way, and I've got some ideas that may or may not pan out in how new income streams for artists, because we can't, you know, people go, wow, what an interesting life. I've struggled financially. This is the life I've chosen. I'm not feeling bad or sorry for myself. And my wife married me knowing that, and you know, we do the best we can together.
And this is Bobby Lloyd for everybody. So
Bobby Lloyd.
Yep.
Yeah.
You want to? And so Meg, Bobby. Is, Meg,
yeah, I'll give her a little shout out.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
She's the CBO. Her title, Chief Baking Officer.
I love that title.
Yeah, she was. You've seen her on, you know, doing demos and stuff on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, and this is what I'll say to the young listeners out there who might be thinking about marriage, be very upfront, be very transparent about what is in your heart, about what your vocation is, because a lot of issues with money become major factors in dividing, you know, and laying waste to what could be potentially great relationships for couples.
Yeah.
You know, I always told my wife, I never hid the fact that I was an artist. Yes, I do need to make a living, so I have that business side of me, but that's the artist side can be very strong, and, you know, I can be selfish at times with my time where I need my time alone. And I love her for the fact that she affords me that time. You know, it's part of what makes our relationship work, and she understands when I'm in creation mode, or, you know, she appreciates my depression or frustration if I don't make a lot of money on writing a song and releasing it, or, you know, I've had a failure at something, podcasting, for example. You know, very hard to make a living in podcasting if you love doing it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it was a challenge. So, my, you know, the love and support of my family and my immediate family never goes unnoticed. I try to give that pat on the back, that hug, appreciation as much as I can.
Yeah.
And, thank you for having me on the show and for letting me share my story.
Yeah.
So, DustyWright.com, the links to the Bandcamp and all that stuff. If somebody wants to email me to reach me, my email address is on there.
And Dusty Rhodes on Transcendental Music, get the shows there too.
Dusty Wright. It's culturecatch.com if they want to listen to the shows. And Twitter, Dusty Wright at Twitter. I don't have that many Twitter followers. There's only so many hours in the day. I have a few.
We will endeavor. Not that you need our help necessarily in getting more attention. You've got plenty of professional credits, but we're going to provide links to everything as well. And Dusty, again, thanks very much for coming on, talking about this subject. It's a tough one, and you've shared candidly, openly, and warmly. We appreciate it so much. We definitely are going to get back together. I want to talk about Patreon. I want to talk about Bandcamp. I want to talk about some artist income streams that people need to kind of be aware of. It is tough to make it as an artist. It is brutal out there in many, many ways. And so I think we need to share some of these places where people can go and support all this hard work that you're doing, that others are doing creatively, that matters to our world around us. So, Dusty, thanks again. So great to talk to you. And I'm
thanks, Paul.
Thrilled for the music.
Thanks, and we need to get together and break bread again. The four of us as a couple,
most definitely.
Next time I'm down in your neck of the woods, or vice versa, let's make that happen. All the best to your family as well. Love and hugs and pats on the back.
Same to
you. You guys are doing great work. Thank you for sharing.
Of course, Dusty. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Cheers to you. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Navigating you to a future of clarity, health, happiness, and senior geek chic. Choosy seniors choose better. The Not Old, Better podcast. Not old, better. You can also find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and SoundCloud. Check out the website, notoldbetter.com, for easy-to-find links to keep up with us on social media. If you like our show, please remember to rate us on iTunes and SoundCloud. The Not Old, Better podcast, sponsored by Senestet, is produced every month for your enjoyment and development. Show notes and links are found at notoldbetter.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and be sure to add us to your favorite RSS feed at iTunes or SoundCloud.